Good morning, family. My name is Tori, and I'm an addict. I typically say an addict in long-term recovery because it's going to take me a long time to figure this out. I'm not fooled about the extent of my condition. And that's a good thing, because when I came in here, I didn't know I was going to find, especially here in Oklahoma, such a warm welcome and a place for me to belong and to find identity. So much love to you all. 3 Christmases ago, I was at a function where they had this Christmas pudding, right? And I took a bite of this delicious, beautiful Christmas pudding, and it was full of alcohol. And I ran over to the lady. I was like, oh my gosh, there's alcohol in this. It cooks off. Whew, are you sure? Yes, so I ate it reluctantly. Give me another. Well, funny you say that, because 2 Christmases ago, I had the same pudding. And the disease crawled up in my brain, and I took that first bite, and I went, I wonder if there's alcohol in this. Don't ask. Have another bite. Wonder if I'll feel funny. Oh my gosh, and I ate the whole damn thing, and then I asked. I was in a mental relapse, you know. I got clean on the screen. Story time. Whoop, whoop. We meet tonight at 9 p.m. Central, and I found a girlfriend in my home group, and I said, I need a new sponsor, because my sponsor got sick and couldn't sponsor me anymore. COVID had decimated this young, beautiful woman's life to where turning her head was painful. And I said, I need a hard-ass bitch who's going to be really tough. And I mean, because I know me. I am a tough, strong woman, and I'll bowl you over with a sweet little smile and laugh behind your back, going, ha-ha, look how I did that. And they said, well, here's a list of them, but this one is the toughest. And I got to meet Joan online and wanted to fire her about 8 times so far in the past year plus. And that's how you know you got a good sponsor, when you don't want to fire their ass, because she's bringing stuff up in me that, oh, I don't want to face and I don't have to look at it. Won't you be my friend? Hell no. Look at this stuff. And so I thank her so much. And she said after 5 years, I'd hear this magical pop. It'd be my head coming out of my ass. I heard the pop in January. And I have you to thank for a lot of that. And so I hope that you open your hearts, minds, and souls, and spirits to an incredibly gifted, talented woman who last night was 7 in the longest time of Cleat Time. I give you Joan from California.
Come on, girl.
Okay. Can you hear me?
No.
All righty. Oh my goodness. I am loud. All right. Okay. I'm going to stand back.
You're fine.
Okay. Am I okay? All right. Good morning, everybody. My name is Joan, and I am an addict.
Hi, Joan.
And before I get started here, I'd like to have some manners, because that's something that I learned here. Which is, first, thank you to everybody on the committee, and could we have one more round of applause for everybody who made this happen?
Oh, thank you.
Because conventions don't just happen. Meetings don't just happen. Recovery just doesn't happen. Like, there's got to be some work in it. I didn't know that when I got here. And we'll digress for just a moment. I thought that if I slept on the book, I could get it through osmosis. Thought if I rubbed it on me, I could get it. Better yet, if I slept with you, I would get your recovery. And in which case, I'd have the most recovery in the entire world. And so if you're new, let me just reassure you, that's not how recovery is transmitted. Other things are transmitted that way, and thank God there's medicine for that. Okay, so to everybody that is of service, thank you. Thank you for showing up and being willing to show up even when you didn't feel like showing up. Thank you for living within traditions, those things that when I got here, I wasn't going to do steps, but I sure as hell like the traditions not... Stop, right? Thank you for living within the traditions. Thank you for tradition one and living in unity and putting the us ahead of the me, right? I super appreciate that. This stuff doesn't just happen, and thank you. And thank you to the committee for inviting me. I am humbled by that. And when I get real quiet with that, I can start crying. Because where I come from, at the end of my using, nobody was saying, just keep coming back. Nobody was saying, welcome home. What people were saying was, stay away. Stay far, far away. You are no longer wanted here. It didn't mean I didn't show up. It didn't mean that if you let me into your house, shame on you. Shame on you. Because by the time I left, you needed to check your wallet, and you needed to check your medicine cabinet, and you needed to check your purse, and your old lady, and your old man, because I'm coming through. Whoever's got what I need, you are fair game. And that's how I rolled in here. Right? Everything was a transaction. And so thank you. Thank you for thinking that this addict has something to share. And I am humbled by that. And I don't see any small children. I understand that it's Sunday morning, spiritual. I'm going to try to keep the swearing at a minimum because I get to be in charge of my language today. I do. And what I'm going to say is, and if you are new, if you are in your first 30, 60, 90 days, first 5 years, welcome home. Welcome home. We have been waiting for you. Pull up a chair, pull up a square, right? Like at the end of the meeting, we're going to say, just keep coming back. Fucking stay. Stay just for today. That's my one swear word. Just stay. We need you. We need you. I need you. And so what I'm going to share about today is I'm going to talk a little bit about how I got here. And the reason that I'm going to talk about it today is because I've had the honor and privilege of being able to celebrate my recovery anniversary with you all this weekend. I don't talk a whole lot about like how I got here, because even after 37 years, because I have 37 years and 2 days today. And let me tell you, I am impressed by that. My disease, however, is not. I am, but my disease is not. Is that even after 37 years, when I talk about how I got here, it'll still probably bring me to tears. And because I am just humbled by it. Because if I were a betting person, and I can be a betting person if it's your money, if I were a betting person, I would have never bet on me to still be here, because this wasn't my plan. So, you know, we're not going to start with the year I was born. I'm just going to say, when I sit in a meeting and somebody's like, and I was born in, I'm like, okay, here we go. Okay. What I will say is that the first time I got loaded, I was 12 years of age. I was 12 years of age. I should have known that very first time that it wasn't going to work out well, because I was already under the bridge. Right? Like, I was under the bridge. And what I can tell you is that that 12-year-old girl, that very first time she put some substances into her body, the magic happened. The magic happened. And what happened was that all the pain and all the anger and all the fear and all the dis-ease in her life, her skin didn't fit and it hurt to breathe. And she didn't know how she was going to do it one more day. And the first time those substances hit her body, she took a breath. That was 51 years ago. And I can still tell you, I can still remember what it felt like. I can still feel it. And it was going to be okay. It was going to be okay. And I'll tell you that I don't get into the whole mental masturbation about whether I was born an addict or I became an addict. I really, you know, like, I've drank a lot of coffee. I've stayed up all night, you know, trying to figure that out, along with the nature of God. Both of those things. I'm not here to talk about either of those things. What I will tell you is that that night an addict was born. An addict was born, and I chased it. For the next 13 years, I did anything and everything I could do for just one more. And the disease of addiction didn't take anything from me. I gave it away. I gave it all away. Any morals, any principles, anything. Eventually, I'm giving you my body, and I don't care what you do with it. Just give me one more. Tell me, what do we got to do? Give me what I need and get the hell away from me. Because what I know about love is that it hurts. And that when you tell me that it's going to be okay, it's not going to be okay. And I use, because when I'm using, I am numb. And when I am numb, I don't care what you do to me. Just give me one more. And I don't talk about a DOC. When I got here, like, DOC, I never had the luxury of having a DOC. My DOC is more. My DOC is, what do you got? My DOC is, what do I got to do to get one more? I will be whoever you need me to be. Right? And I did all those things. And I didn't care. I didn't care. Because I, by the time I got here, I wasn't using to get high. And that's not because the drugs didn't stop working. What ended up happening was that the hole was so huge that there was, I couldn't use enough to numb anymore. And I was on a suicide mission. I just wanted to die. You know, and when I think about, like, the last 5 years of my using, I really can't tell you a lot about what happened because I don't remember. Quite honestly. And I don't know if it's because I was in a blackout. I don't know if it's simply because the trauma was so big that it's just been blocked out. I know my body holds it. I don't know. And I don't need to know. What I just need to know is that when I think about the at the end of my using, it's me curled up in the fetal position on the bottom of a shower somewhere. Lying in my own excrement and my own vomit, covered in bruises and blood, wondering why I can't die, and why, if there is a God, it hates me so much that it won't kill me, and that I gotta use to get up off the ground. And it's on. It's on. I am coming through you, and I can't die. So, that's kind of what it looked like at the end. And what I will tell you is, and I was thinking about, you know, Journey to Freedom. Like, I didn't come into Narcotics Anonymous to get free. I didn't even come in here because I wanted to stop using. I knew what life looked like when I wasn't using, and it sucked. It's a California word for it's not real good. And I wasn't, you know, like, I didn't come in here to be free. But what recovery has shown me, is that on the other side of the pain that I can live in, there is this freedom beyond my wildest dreams, but I got to be able to go through it. And that my behaviors and the behaviors of people around me, like, I never know what how my behaviors will have that ripple effect. Somebody told me, you know, I heard it like it's a, like the butterfly thing, right? You know, like, there is this ripple effect. And so the last, I don't know, at like 18 months, something like that, before I got clean, you know, I could pull it together for like 5 minutes, you know what I mean, and show up and... And there was this nice young man. and his name was Todd. And I met Todd And Todd did not realize that he was going to be taken hostage, because that's, I don't know about any of you all, people are like, oh, I had these relationships. I didn't have a relationship, I had a hostage situation, right? Like, let's call it what it is, right? I didn't come in here knowing how to people. I'm still working on it. Thank God for traditions, because they allow me to people, because I'm still not sure I even like people some days. Just being honest up here. So there was this nice young man, and his name was Todd. And I took Todd hostage. What I didn't know when I met Todd was that Todd had been going camping one year, just right before we met. And as he's driving out to go camping, I don't camp, by the way. That's a whole nother story, but I've slept on the ground enough, thank you very much. I love a bed with sheets. Oh my God. Okay, so Todd is going out to go camping, and he's driving down the freeway, and on the median of the freeway is this puppy. This puppy. And he knows that if he doesn't stop and pick up the puppy's going to get killed. And so he does. Picks up this puppy. Half lab, half Great Dane, big old black, ends up being this big old black dog, and he names him Gus. And I get into this relationship hostage situation with Todd, and I get to meet Gus. Todd eventually fled. He escaped, let's call it what it is. And hopefully he got a bunch of therapy. God hope he got therapy. I did, hope he did. But the beauty is that I got to co-parent Gus for the last year of my using. And what I can tell you is that wherever I went, Gus was there. And I came to in places I ought not have been, and there was Gus. I remember coming to, sitting on a bar stool, and Gus was right under the bar, right? That dog didn't care what I was doing. That dog was there. That dog loved me. That dog showed up for me. Feelings. Welcome to recovery. You're going to feel good and feel good, right? And so what ended up happening was on April 8th, 1989, I came to about half a mile off the beach out in the ocean. Now, I live in Santa Cruz. I live 5 blocks from the beach. If you ever want to find me, that's where you'll find me. I like the beach, right? Let me be very clear, in my using, I never went to the beach. Even though I live 5 blocks from the beach. Why? Because Chewy's not at the beach, right? What I need is not at the beach. I have a disease that keeps me on a really short leash. It's about 4 to 5 blocks long. It allows me to do a circuit. My disease tells me who I can talk to, what I can eat, when I can shower, all that kind of stuff. I never went to the beach. And on April 8th, 1989, I came to half a mile out in the ocean. And I knew I was going to die. I knew I was going to die. And I was okay with dying. And that girl, that broken 25-year-old girl, I had that moment, that same moment that I had sitting under the bridge 12 years ago. Or 13 years ago when I was 12 years old and it came over me and I had that quiet and it didn't hurt anymore and I knew that I could just slide under and nobody would care and nobody would know because everyone, there was no one left. There were no humans left in my life. Because see, I have no space for you when I am using. It's all about the ways and means of getting more. I just need one more. Just need one more. So I was going to die. I have no idea how I got there. And I looked up, and Gus was in the water with me. And I knew in that moment I did something that I hadn't done in a really long time. I thought of something other than me. And I knew, like, I didn't give two shits if I... Oh, second swear. There is a child. Oh, my God. Okay, no more swearing. Okay, so I didn't care if I died, but I couldn't let Gus die. I have no recollection of swimming in. My next recollection was coming to. I was on the beach, and Gus was next to me. And on August 9th, I sat in my house and I used everything that I could use, and I couldn't get any relief because I was at that place where, you know, first it was magic, and then it was medication, and then it was maintenance, and I was just in misery, just in misery. And somehow or another, I got on my bike because at that point, phones were attached to walls, and I didn't have one because that would have involved money, and we all know any money I got where that went. And as my last sponsor used to say, I did what I do best. I pedaled my ass down to the payphone, and I made a phone call. I made a phone call. And thank God for traditions. Thank God for steps. Because there was somebody on the other end of that phone, and they picked up. I don't know what kind of day they were having. I don't know if they were thinking, oh, gee, can't wait to talk to an addict in recovery. Or wanting help. But somebody was there, and this is when phones didn't travel with you, and somebody picked up that phone. And they told me where a meeting was. Now, I'd like to tell you I went directly to a meeting. Of course I didn't, because I had stuff back at home that had to get finished. And on April 10th, 1989, I crawled into my first meeting. And I have never left. And that has nothing to do with me. It has to do with what we find here. What we find here. And what I can tell you is I came in and I sat in the back. I sat in the back, and I have never been to a spin dry or a detox. And so if you're here and you're new and you're thinking, you know, I haven't either. Right? I haven't gone to one of those places either, except to visit. Right? Say hi to other people or do H&I or something like that. I came in and I sat in the back. And I was starting to detox. I have only ever had to detox once because I learned really early that if you stay loaded, you never have to detox. Who knew? Kind of along the lines like if you don't pick up, you can't get loaded. Really? I thought it was like the fifth one. I thought if I could just I cheated my way through chemistry. That should have been a good sign as well, that this was not going to end well. Like, I can't figure out what the magic formula is. But what I will tell you is what I felt that very first time I went to a meeting was something I hadn't felt in a really long time. I was safe. I was safe. And I don't know, you know, what anybody talked about. I do know that there was a woman who stood up at that meeting. There was only one woman in the meeting, me and a bunch of dudes. And she stood up, and this is at the end of the 80s, and she's all in black leather with platinum blonde hair. And I remember thinking, I think I love her and I hate her simultaneously. But she raised her hand and she said, I have 6 months today. Whoa. I didn't know anybody, like, why? Why would you do that? Really? 6 months? Like weekends and nights and, right? Like continuous. And those two things carried a message to me. And I'd like to tell you that in that moment, like, the desire to use left it, and it did not. And if you're on a pink cloud, like, right on for you. I have no idea what that feels like, because I wanted to use. But what I heard here was, we don't use no matter what, and then a whole lot of words about my mama. Right? You know what I mean? How did you know my mom? Right? Like, and we work steps. And then all those same words. Right? I heard those things. We don't. And what I heard, which again blew my mind, was that you don't have to get loaded even if you want to. Really? I had no idea. I had no idea. But the miracle happened for me that very first night, which is that I went home. I'm sure, I don't really remember, but I could put money on it that I didn't circle up with anybody, you know. Like, I have really good standing, very nice, not very nice lady face, you know what I mean? I'm not sure when I had had my last shower. My hair was short. It was a bunch of different colors. I'd come in on a bike. I only had a couple of pair of shoes, and I think the ones I was wearing were 4 inches on my bike, which would put me at 6'4". Right? Kind of hard to miss me. I'm here. And you all said, welcome home. You all said, keep coming back. Right? And I did. And I did. And I believe in recovery. I believe in recovery. Why? Because I have everything that I know about life. I have learned from you all, and you all told me, if you don't use and you don't die, you're going to grow up here, and everything that you need to know about doing life, you can find in these rooms. Right? I know, you know, my parents are good people. They're good people, and they're broken people. And broken people can't give away healthy living lifestyles. But you all have shown me how to do that. Right? You all have shown me, like, I had to learn how to dress appropriately. I thought the lower it was cut and the higher it was cut, you know, like, you know, it might be hot in here or something like that. You were like, honey, get yourself an appropriate dress because you're going to go to a bunch of weddings. Because that's what we do around here. You're going to go to a bunch of weddings. You're going to go to a bunch of funerals. And if you use, we would have something appropriate to bury you in. What? Yeah. And so I stayed. I stayed, and I will be forever grateful to you. What a small ask it is to show up and to be of service, to give back. To give back. I'm not here because I'm some badass addict, although I think that I am. But my story ended with a whimper, right? I didn't go out guns blazing kind of thing, right? I went out because I was trying to kill myself. And so I do the things that you all told me, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. You all told me to find a home group. A home group. That is a meeting that if I'm not at, somebody's going to miss me, because I could not afford to be homeless in recovery. And particularly in this day and age when we have all these options. We have in-person we have physical meetings, we have virtual meetings, right? Like, there's no reason for me to not have a home group. And if you ever come to Santa Cruz, California, Thursday noon, the lunch break meeting, that is my home group. That is where you will find me. And in my fellowship in Santa Cruz, I tell people that's my home group, and to use that information judiciously. If you don't want to hear me, don't come to that meeting, because I'm sharing at that meeting. Because I need people to know where I am. So I go to meetings regularly. I have a sponsor. I am on my fourth sponsor. My first sponsor, God love her, got me through my first year. And she taught me how to go to a meeting. How to go to a meeting, which means I show up early, take care of my business, sit my rear end in a chair. Can he spell? ASS in the chair from prayer to prayer, right? and because we don't want to see you getting up and sashaying through, you know, but what if I have to go to the bathroom? Then stop drinking 5 cups of coffee. Sit down. Sit down, right? And if we want to hear about from the disease, we'll ask you. Really? Because after 90 days, I don't know about any of you all, but I got all this stuff figured out. You know, you should. You know, I've had a shower and a meal, and I might be sleeping in a bed with some sheets. I have, you know, sit down and be quiet. And they didn't say it that nicely. Still, my favorite spiritual principle is shut the up. Yeah. Yep. The next one is get in the car. You know what I mean? Like, those are two spiritual principles that I still try to employ today, particularly when my husband is annoying me. So, and I love him. I love him. I'm what he prayed for, and I know he's going to listen to this later, so I just want to say that out loud. So I go to meetings, and I go to meetings regularly, and I have a sponsor, and she showed me how to show up and to be of service, right? She got me through my first year. Then we'll say for a half year, I self-sponsored. Oh my God. If you are self-sponsoring, you have a fool for a sponsor. Let me just say that. Because at 18 months, I was not only homicidal, I was suicidal. And then I heard a woman get up at a meeting. See, because I believe sponsorship is for me to find the person who wants what they have, right? And that I am attracted to. Let me also say that at first, you know, my first go around with sponsorship, where I come from, you know, there were a bunch of men with felonies, tattoos, Harleys, anger management issues, and if I was really lucky, an ankle bracelet. And I was like, oh, sign me up, right? Right? Because while I love you guys, you're a little easier to play than the women. So I was like, oh, bring it on. And thank God there were men in my fellowship who believed in the program of recovery and wouldn't touch me, regardless of my best endeavors to be touched. Because like I said, that was the language that I knew was all about transaction. And so there was this woman, and she came into my life at 18 months. And let me also be very clear that I did not believe in a higher power, in God, in any of that kind of stuff. And what that woman did was she took me through the steps, and she showed me a faith and a belief, because I walked with that woman when her 17-year-old son hung himself on Mother's Day. And I do not know how she walked through that, and yet I watched this woman walk with a grace and a dignity and a strength and courage beyond my understanding, and I knew that she was leaning into something. And if she could lean into something, I could lean into whatever it was that she was leaning into. And then eventually she moved away to take care of her parents. And at that point, this woman came into my life. And she became the mom that I had wanted all my life. She was this little woman, and at the end of her life, she wore butterflies in her hair, and she would swear and use God in the same sentence. I knew she was my gal. And she would call me Joni. And she would call me baby doll. And no one called me. My parents never called me that. She would introduce me as her daughter. My kids thought that she was their grandma. Right? And for 28 years, that woman loved me. She was my person. And I would go to her house, and I would sit on her God-awful couch with the pink roses, and we would do step work, and she would sit next to me, and she would hold my hand, and she would tell me how much she loved me, and she would feed my children bologna. Oh. And they loved her. And I had the honor and the privilege a couple of years ago to walk her home. I sat in the hospital and I held her hand. And she had a PICC line in the side of her neck. And she just told me, "I'm tired. I'm tired." And she was waiting to meet up with her husband who had preceded her. And what she showed me was a marriage that took, that she married her husband when she was 18 and he was 22. She had over 60 years of marriage to that man. And she showed me how to stick and stay, even when it doesn't feel good, even when I think recovery is a stupid idea. And I just gotta say that I don't wake up every day and go, woohoo! You know, some days I wake up and go, damn, man, what happened, right? As I feel like, as I'm all snap, crackling, popping, you know? I mean, I just got to say that when my husband and I get out of bed some mornings, it's like, you would have thought we had, rolled hard the night before. Which is part of why I keep coming back, because there are people here that are older than I am and please keep coming back, because I need to see how we do this. So, what I will tell you is, and so after 28, well, before my last sponsor passed, I knew she was going to pass. And so what I needed to do is I needed to find another sponsor. And this woman, because when we show up, the people, the freedom is presented to us. But I can't find the freedom. I can't find the person who's going to show me the way out if I'm sitting at home watching Netflix, watching food porn, thinking somehow or another I'm going to become a chef. Right? Right? Or some kind of magical baker. You know what I mean? Like the way that I got to be here. I got to be now. I got to be in. I didn't wait for Chewy to show up at my doorstep. I was out chasing Chewy.
Right?
So I asked this woman, and I do want to say that it is ironic to me, every sponsor I have had has been this big. And when she gives me suggestions, many of which I think are stupid, I would just want to go, I could sit on you. After I fire you, right? But what I will tell you is that that woman walked me through the death of my sponsor, because I knew she was going to die, and I know that I alone cannot walk through this. I can't walk through anything alone. Recovery tells me it is not an I program, it is a we program. And if a couple of months after my last sponsor died, my new sponsor, her name is Vicky, she called me up one day and she said, "I was just calling to see how you were doing, and I wanted to know if it would be okay if I called you Joni." See, I have a disease that tells me no one will ever love me again the way that my last sponsor did. Good run, Joan. You got it. Hope you enjoyed it, because you're SOL now. But because I show up and because I am present, because I am willing to walk through and share what's going on, the miracles happen. The miracles are there all the time. It is whether or not I am so self-obsessed that I can't see outside myself. Right? And so I have a sponsor. She sent me a little message to Joni this morning and told me to give it away the way that it was freely given to me, because that's what we do. That's what we do. And so I now have a sponsor. I have a sponsorship family. I have sponsee sisters, a word that will never roll off my tongue. I have what? Sponsee sisters. Okay. And in that discomfort is where the growth comes. In that discomfort is where I get to not become complacent. So I have a home group. I have a sponsor. I work steps. And the reason that I work steps is not because I'm trying to change into something I am not. I believe that the steps are designed to take away all the armor that I thought beginning at 2 years of age that I needed to have in order to be safe. Right, there is Michelangelo, who is that amazing artist who did the torso of David, that beautiful marble sculpture. When they asked Michelangelo how he carved David, he said, "I didn't carve David. I just took away the parts that weren't David." And I think of the steps as the same way. As the same thing. I try to live in 3. I try to live in 7. I try to live in 11. You know, step 3 isn't about what I, like when I say what I think God or the nature of God is. It is what is it that Joan needs in order to be able to step off into some faith. And I have this beautiful, I was watching this show, because as you all can guess, I'm a dog person. I was watching this show about dogs. And in Italy, in order to be a lifeguard, it's a government job. And the lifeguards have dogs. And it's this whole training thing that, you know. Anyways, the very last scene is they're going to test the lifeguard and the dog at the end of the training. And the dog, and if the dog passes, then they get a job, kind of thing. So at the very last scene is the lifeguard and the dog, and they're in this helicopter over a lake. And the lifeguard, he goes and he jumps, he launches. And then the dog has to go if it's gonna pass. And I have this beautiful picture of this dog. And she's got her life jacket on, and she is launched out of this helicopter. She didn't get up to the edge and look down and go, "Huh, I don't know if I should jump. I don't know if I'm the kind of dog that jumps." You know what I mean? What she knew was she had faith. That's her person. That was, and she launched, there was no reticence. She launched, she had full faith that that's where she would walk, that was where she was supposed to be. And I try to live my life that way. If I believed that God had my back, whatever God is, and I would like to point out at this point that dog is God spelled backwards. Yeah. That if God had my back, how would I behave when I'm in fear? And I can tell you that 9 times out of 10, I would behave differently. That when I am in fear, I get small. When I get in fear, my head starts telling me that I don't deserve, and that I am garbage, and that I am expendable, and that I am not worthy. But if I have a higher power that has my back and it's going to work out exactly as it's supposed to, then how am I going to behave in this moment? I'm launching. And step 7, for everybody here who hasn't done a step 4 is do step 4. 6 and 7 are the ones. No one talks about 6 and 7. I mean, really? Really? Step 4 is like, this is who I am. This is who I am when I'm in a lot of fear. 6 and 7 is, I'm going to behave differently. And step 7, it talks about in step 7 that's why we have a fellowship. See, my sponsor doesn't have to be the end-all, be-all. My sponsor doesn't have all the experience of everything that I walk through. What my sponsor has experience in is living, not working, living in the spiritual principles of the steps. So step seven for me is the hard one. Step seven is the one where I'm going to try some different behavior. And I don't know about you all, but I had to learn behaviors. Let me just start with, I'm married. I already mentioned that. I'm what he prayed for. And I have been with my husband. I have been with my husband for 30 years. All right? And yeah, isn't that amazing? I don't know about you all, but 30-year relationships. And we have not only one child, we have two kids. Who knew? Who knew? And what I'm going to tell you is I don't have a whole lot of great parenting skills, right? But what I learned how to do was I learned how to come here and find people who had children, who seemed to like their children, and their children seemed to like them, right? Like, they seemed to be kind of stoked on being parents. How is it that you're a parent and you don't beat your children? Because I'm just going to give away what I know, you know what I mean? I mean, I have this funny story about, like, so let me just say, and you all showed me how to do that. You gave me suggestions. Right, you gave me concrete suggestions. When I am frustrated with my child, this is what I do. Right, you didn't go, just let it go. Well, that ain't gonna work, because I'm gonna do some homicide here, you know. My child is channeling their father, and it's annoying me. You know what I mean? And my children have never been hit. My children have never been beat. My children have not been called the names. Right? My son was 12, and this was in the cell phone age, and he had a cell phone, and I'm sure he was just being a 12-year-old boy. I mean, that's all he knows how to be, right? And I was super frustrated with him, and I remember looking at him and saying, okay, I don't know what else to do. I have two options at this point. I can take your cell phone, or I can spank you. Now, this is a child who's never been spanked before. He's also my child. What I would like to tell you is he is me unbroken. And he looked at me and he said, you can see wheels are turning. And he looks at me and he goes, what would it look like if I got spanked? And I looked at him and I said, I'm going to spank you until I feel better. And he handed me his phone. My last, you know, and so that's step seven. How do I do life differently? And you all tell me, you show me. And finally, it is step 11. And step 11 is about being able to quiet my mind and leaning into a power that I don't need to understand. I just need to know that it's there and it's not me. And what I can tell you is there's this part in step 11 where it talks about, and I'm going to butcher this because I only have two brain cells and they are not working together right now, about like that we come to understand, believe that what our higher power wants for us is what we truly want for ourselves. And oftentimes, I say this all the time, the gifts come to me, right? My last sponsor used to say, Joni, it's not happening to you, it's happening for you. And I'd be like, okay, I need to fire her, right? And the gifts never come wrapped in pretty package. I have never gotten the gift in with the bows and all that stuff. It comes wrapped in caca and it is on fire, right? And I'm always like, WTF. So what I'd like to say, and I'm gonna try and hold this to 5 minutes. So about just over 2 years ago, I was coming to the end of another chapter in my life. My sponsor had just passed. My career was coming to an end. A friendship of 30 years had just ended. And that was a really important friendship for me. And I was supposed to go out on a Friday morning and go run single track trail out in the woods. Way out where there is no one, because that's where I like to be. And my girlfriend the night before called and said, hey, you want to go for a bike ride tomorrow morning? I said, sure, I'll go for a ride. We have this 20-mile loop that we do, and there's this huge, it's about a 7-mile climb. You get up all the way up to the top, and then you come flying down. You know, I think that I'm Lance Armstrong, tucking it, you know what I mean, right? Like, and we come down the other side, going 35, 40 miles an hour. You know, because I still think the Olympics are calling. And what I can tell you is that I remember climbing all the way to the top. And the next thing I remember is that I came to in the Stanford Trauma Center with a C collar because we went down the hill. We stopped. I was going through a intersection on a super busy road, and I went down. I stopped breathing, shut traffic down super early in the morning. My girlfriend's over my body in the middle of the road, and there was a woman who was walking up the road super early in the morning. It's probably not even 7 in the morning. She said, do you need me to call somebody? My girlfriend said yes, and when the paramedics showed up, two of the guys on the fire truck knew not only her, but knew me. And they got me to Stanford. And the good news is it wasn't a heart attack, it wasn't a stroke, it wasn't a seizure. Bad news, it wasn't a heart attack, it wasn't a stroke, it wasn't a seizure. What I will tell you is, and I fractured ribs, and what happens is in the state of California, when you do something epic like that, another California word, epic, they take your driver's license. Okay, so I'm turning 60, I'm retiring, I live 5 blocks from the beach, I got like plans, and I can't drive. And what I can tell you is that I don't know how graciously I did it, but for 18 months, I did not drive. What I can tell you is that my 24-year-old son, the one that went off to college, graduated with honors, and then moved home. That's a whole nother share. That for the next 18 months, my son every week drove me to the grocery store, and we had lunch every week. And he didn't just drive me to the grocery store, he got out of the car and he pushed the grocery cart through, and we spent time together. If you had asked me, would you like to have a closer relationship with your son, I would have said yes, but I didn't know how to do it. What I can also tell you, and here come the tears, is that I spent the last 2 years of my dog's life with her at home. See, I couldn't drive. This had been my road dog. This was my thank you to Gus for having saved my life. And what I got to do was I got to pay it forward. And I had this wonderful dog. And the last 2 years, and she was my running buddy. And the last 2 years of her life, I was downstairs with her, and we would go on little walks around the block, and I carried her down the stairs, and I carried her up the stairs, and I got to walk her home too. I got to say thank you. Whew. I have no idea who gets to affect my life or whose life I get to affect. But I get to show up. I get to show up, and I get to live in the principles of the steps and the traditions. And there is this beautiful story that's quick that I'm closing with. And it's the starfish story. And there's a little child, a little girl, and she's walking along the beach. And the beach is littered with starfish. And she looks at her parent and she says, "What's going to happen to all those starfish?" Parent says, "Oh, honey, there's no hope. There's no hope. They're going to die. That's just the way that it is. Once an addict, always an addict." The next morning, parent wakes up, goes into the little girl's room. She isn't there. Runs down to the beach, and on the beach is this little girl, and she is picking up starfish, and she is hucking them into the ocean. And the parent says, "Oh, baby girl, you can't make a difference." She picks up a starfish. She looks at her parent. She goes, "I just did in this one's life," and throws it. The greatest honor and privilege I have is to show up and to participate in my recovery, to stick my hand out and say, "Welcome home. Just stay. We've been waiting for you. If you want what we have, grab a hold. Buckle up, buttercup, because it is on." Thank you again. My name is Joan, and I am an addict.